Hi there, you're listening to Santosh Pillai, and my podcast today is on the politics of hope and humanity during our current pandemic of COVID-19. This is loosely based on an article that I wrote for the Mail and Guardian, which was published on March 20. I was recently asked to speak at the opening of an evocative photo exhibition at the Durban Art Gallery. It was curated by Chantal Boyson, a global ambassador for mental health, and titled The Empathy and Hope Projects. The photos were amazing. They were windows into subaltern worlds, usually unseen or ignored. Mental illness, loss and loneliness, refugees, homeless people, drug addicts, heavy stuff. And as I stood in front of these photos, trying to imagine lived experiences that are so different from my own, these portals to empathy invited me to think about something else. I was thinking about hope. Somewhere, somehow, people muster up the hope to continue living. How and where do they find it? As a psychologist, I find myself forecasting hope for a living. But it's not easy seeing silver linings in clouds of despair. But it's there. It has to be. Our survival and our humanity is proof of it. History shows us that each generation faces some catastrophic event that makes tomorrow seem impossible. Whether it's the World Wars I or II, the Holocaust, apartheid, Spanish flu, Russian flu, the plagues, smallpox, cholera, yellow fever, HIV, swine flu, Ebola, and now COVID-19. Hope must be hardwired into our genes as an evolutionary trip switch against hopelessness. And it's not wishy-washy stuff. We'd be extinct long ago if this wasn't true. After leaving the gallery, I wondered if I had mistakenly shaken anyone's hands or hugged friends unthinkingly. Suspicion and paranoia set in. I washed my hands for an extra 20 seconds just to be sure. This was our new normal, a few days before the lockdown began. But we can panic, or we can activate hope and empathy as central pivots around which we consider a human-centered approach to dealing with a biological pandemic. Absolutely, hand washing is vital, but so is our short and long-term mental health. Scenes of the Italian singing, or believe it or not, the Americans howling in appreciation from their balconies, remind us to humanize our responses to staying safe. It's tricky because social distancing is the very antithesis of how to promote good mental health. But I smiled when I watched our very own Glovo Youth Choir educating us through song and dance on a video on Twitter. I giggle every day at the endless memes and jokes, reminding us that humor and safety are not mutually exclusive. These are islands of hope. However, people are dying and will die. Some people will die sooner than others because they already have compromised immune systems or are excluded from the steady stream of online information. We know that life is going to get worse before it gets better. South Africa's exorbitant inequalities and grotesque list of other public health issues, from violence to viruses, will not make this easier. Our government is already being celebrated, however, also rightly critiqued for not acting with the same devoted urgency and efficiency for other matters that both qualitatively and quantitatively are as serious, such as hunger, suicide, femicide, the list goes on. We know this. This is our everyday. Globally, politicians have also been paradoxically lambasted for treating COVID-19 with the seriousness that it deserves, but mostly because high-income countries remain the epicenter. And let's admit it, rich lives matter more than, say, the lives of West Africans during the Ebola outbreak in 2014. In which the global response was nowhere near as dramatic. We have to face up to the neoliberal politics of how, where, why governments respond. And this is a troubling issue that reveals tensions in global public health. Some publics seem to matter more than others. Social distancing and regular hand washing, for example, cannot be uncritically imported from the West into African contexts that are densely populated and poverty-stricken. lacking basic access to secure housing, water, and sanitation. Hope, therefore, only works if there's empathy for particular realities, and our solutions have to match up to these varied settings. It's complex. And of course, no approach will be perfect. Part of our eventual return to normalcy, when it happens, will have to include frank confessions about what is and was normal to begin with, and how our responses to COVID-19 exposed deep fractures and difficult truths about who we value in society and what kinds of problems get immediate financial and moral attention. Issuing self-quarantining instructions to those who test positive but are asymptomatic relies on the assumption that people understand our interconnectedness and respect our interdependence. We've always known this. Climate change is a perfect example. But now this eternal truth that we're in this together is slapping us in the faces. As the Zulu idiom goes, Umuntu ngumuntu ngabantu. A person is a person through other people. I am because you are. Ironically, perhaps the call for social distance might unite us in our collective purpose and panic. And so, what will photographs of 2020 look like in exhibitions of the future? Would humanity in a time of COVID-19 leave behind an archive of altruism or anarchy, of unity or division, of fatality or solidarity, of hope or hopelessness? I imagine it'll be a mix of all. I am certain also that while the politics of hope is not uncomplicated, that we trust in the robust endurance of coming together as a society, being the tribal creatures that we are, after all. It is essential to our own mental and physical health and our collective well-being as humanity that we do so. Social distancing isn't emotional distancing. And my appeal, my conclusion, is to foreground hope and empathy in our psychological response to COVID-19. Thank you.